they say we should have known better than to fall so deep down into this rabbit hole.
Get we found ready. It's time again to venture down the rabbit hole into the world of cybersecurity. You're plugged into the podcast for security leaders and practitioners with a business sense. Prepare for unique interviews, insights, and practical advice that makes your job just a bit easier. And now, please welcome your guides on this adventure, James Jardine and the White Rabbit, Ruffalos.
All right, welcome to another edition of the Down to Security Rabbit Hole podcast. The podcast you can listen to at the office. I don't know, I'm trying out some new taglines, James.
I like it. That was a nice one. You can also listen to it on our commute, right?
And your commute at the office. The podcast your boss can listen to. I don't know, maybe. We keep these PG for you just so you can do that and get caught listening to it. It's okay. But right, well, here we are still in beautiful Las Vegas at Enfuse Conference. Guided Software being kind enough to bring us out and have us give us access to some really awesome people. Having fun, James?
I'm having a great time. Lots of cool content going on. It's an interesting conference. The keynote was good this morning.
Yeah, they got us pumped up. And I walked in a couple minutes late and I looked around the room like, wow, there's a lot of people in here.
There's a lot of people, and it was a wide screen. Like, it was wide.
That was a super wide screen, and it was actually pretty cool. So Patrick Dennis did a bang-up job. We've got to interview him coming up. But right now, we've got a gentleman that spent the 8 o'clock in the morning session. Oh, man. You got morning the pre-keynote.
Yeah.
That should be...
It's where they put the scrubs.
Well, you did a 45-minute montage of... ransomware hilarity, right? Is that kind of what it was?
Yeah, it was 45 minutes of bad ransomware jokes.
Beautiful. So on that note, Nick Hyatt, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
All right, Nick, tell us a little about who you are, what you do, where you do it, why you do it, and your social security number and credit card and CVV.
Absolutely. I'll photocopy those and get those to you shortly here. My name is Nick Hyatt. I'm senior incident management consultant for Optiv's enterprise incident management team. So primarily responsible for digital forensics, malware forensics, all the good stuff that comes with people getting infected by things they probably don't want to be.
It's like the real world in Vegas here. I'm going to leave that one alone right where that dropped.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, right?
Except when it comes home from you and lives on your computer for a while.
The new motto, I saw it a couple of years ago when I was here. They have it in the shirts. You know, the shirts say, what happens in Vegas stays on Facebook.
Yeah.
Apparently is the new... Yeah.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas unless you pick up the USB drive in the parking lot.
Oh, so we've had a couple of sidebar conversations on ransomware and malware and all kinds of things. And WannaCry has been in the news everywhere, and the hype cycle went to full crazy. I think it's dying down finally. Somebody mentioned yesterday that the... that at some point recently we crossed the more mentions, tweets, blog posts and such about it than there were actual infections, which is a little bit amusing. But
we were monitoring that internally as it was trending. It was interesting seeing it spread across social media and really seeing the conflicting reports of attribution and distribution and things like that. So yeah, I agree that it's probably dying down quite a bit, but man, people are going to make a lot of money off of that.
but that seems to be the trend. I mean, the next thing's going to come out, we're going to forget all about this one. We'll get the talking heads going again. It'll be, see, we told you so. If only you had, hey, buy this tool, it will. You know, if only you had installed this, you'd be fine. I mean, the hype cycle never really, I feel like it just never really ends.
Well, it's monetized, right? I mean, that's how in our industry, I've said it before on the podcast, I mean, that's how we...
You told us so?
Market. I thought years from now, I will say, years ago I said, this is how we market stuff. But this is how we market. I mean, this is how security companies get their name out there, get in the news, is you want to be one of the first ones to be able to jump in the news cycle and start putting your opinion out there about it, whether it's founded on fact or... you know, some other Twitter feed you received, that's we're monetized, we're incentivized to do that because that's how we do marketing.
Absolutely. And what's the goal of business? The goal of business is to make money.
Right.
And how do you make money? I mean, you get your name out there. You know, if you're the third horse across the line, nobody remembers your name. If you're cloud computing, you win the Preakness Stakes. So, I mean, I guess that makes the old adage, the cloud is nothing but somebody else's horse.
I love it.
See? Bad jokes about information security.
That is awesome. You are my new favorite InfoSec stand-up comedian, Nick. Well, you gotta come. Yeah. Well, so, look, ransomware is fundamentally different than malware and all the other stuff, right? I mean, do we treat it differently?
To an extent. I mean, all ransomware is malware, but not all malware is ransomware. And that's a point of confusion that we've been asked before, is that, well, what's the difference between the two? And, you know, the big delineator there is that ransomware is malware that encrypts files on systems. That's its specific goal. It's a monetized scheme to get you to pay the ransom. That's its entire goal. It's a business.
Well, and the joke was, we talked about this over lunch, guys. If you're not, again, folks, if you're not here, you're missing some awesome conference and just some great sidebar conversation over smash burgers, or whatever it is that you ate, James.
You think the podcast is interesting? You imagine being in the off the air conversations that are going
on. There's some things we can't
say for
work. There are things we can't record because we all need to keep our day jobs.
Yeah, I would still like to get a paycheck.
Oh boy. But no, so look, it's gotten really interesting, and we started talking over lunch about how the malware writers out there, particularly with this latest one, may have goofed a little. But they're not out to destroy everything, right? For the same reason, this isn't my analogy, guys, so don't write hate mail. But for the same reason that a bookie, once you fail to pay them, isn't going to shoot you and kill you, they're going to maybe break a body part or two just so you remember that you need to pay them. Right?
Such a great analogy, too, for us being in Vegas. Isn't that
timely?
I keep trying to get away from the... They keep pulling us back in. Oh, my. Okay.
Well, and it's similar. We've talked about it before on the podcast about, you know, credit card fraud and, you know, how the criminals, you know, they keep it at a steady area, right? Yeah. I mean, they don't steal too much at a time or try to sell too much at a time, but they also don't try to steal too little. They keep a balance so that it works, that they're okay, right? Like, people aren't going to – credit card companies aren't taking that next level and saying, you know what, now we got to do something.
Well, that's the thing, right? Fraud people at the big card companies will tell you fraud is exactly at the levels we need it. We are okay with it being. Lowering it would cost too much to make those fraud, and the returns wouldn't be high enough. Letting it go higher would cost them too much, and then they would throw money at it to make it go down to an acceptable. So it turns out that the level of crime is currently in cybercrime is currently acceptable.
Yeah, I would say if you take it, and again, to bring it back to what we were talking about before with WannaCry, if you look at that, they had, 260,000 systems that they infected, and what was the last count on the money? $90,000? It's an awful return rate, but how much work did they put into that? Because Eternal Blue was already dumped by shadow brokers.
Yeah.
I mean, the ransomware itself, you can go download ransomware off of GitHub.
Judging by the implementation, they didn't put a whole lot of work into the GitHub. Yeah, the rate of return actually might have been pretty good. I mean, $90,000?
Right. $90,000 on 2 hours of work?
Is that going to be worth the years in federal penitentiary when they catch up with them?
The guy that wrote it isn't the one that got his house doxxed, so...
That's true. You know, that annoyed the hell out of me, right? The good guy ends up getting...
Yeah, exactly.
So we talked about the difference between ransomware and malware. There's obviously a different risk level, but I mean, the options there, I mean, the risk of malware still could be just as bad or even worse as ransomware. I mean, ransomware, really, the risk depends on what system it's on. You know, with this, I mean, it heavily targeted older healthcare-type systems, right, that, you know, aren't as easy to patch because they're controlled by vendors. So that obviously carries a lot more risk of, I can't use my x-ray machine or something like that, versus if I can get malware into an organization, and depending on what I'm doing with that malware, maybe I haven't locked your system and forced you to pay me $300, but maybe I'm using those systems for resources to attack other things, or I'm stealing, you know, I'm packet sniffing and I'm stealing credentials, and there's still a significant risk there for both sides of those.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the crux of the situation is that people are coming to us and saying, how can I protect against ransomware specifically when it's not just a ransomware issue? It's an issue with the security stance of the entire company. So if you're just specifically targeting against ransomware, well, then whatever other flavor of the month malware is going to come in is going to affect that system. So at its core, having a mature incident response plan that can help you deal with not only ransomware, but worms, phishing emails, everything that a modern company sees from a security standpoint, that's the key. Is not just saying, oh, well, it's WannaCry this week, and then it's Shamoon next week, and then it's Stuxnet, you know, 2 months from now. You don't target specific ones. Look at it from a high level standpoint.
So does it hinder us, or does it cause difficulties when we break things out? We have malware, we have ransomware. I mean, we'd love to come up with new names for everything that comes out there. But I mean, in reality, you're saying, hey, look, you need to protect yourself from malware.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And I mean, even though...
Can we just go back to calling it viruses? Because it's still, I mean, like...
But
people,
similar thing.
We finally
I mean,
got people to understand what a virus is, and now we're coming up with new labels for things that,
but now,
once again, we're drifting away from understanding.
It's our new marketing term, though, right? Like, everybody's hitting you up. They're like, we're going to protect you from ransomware. And it's like, that's great, but what about all this other stuff? And realizing
right, exactly.
that, I mean, they're probably deployed in the same manner,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, all that is similar, just the difference is one's encrypting files and saying, you pay me money. The other one kind of stays hidden and you don't know it's there.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you get the pop, what is it, all the pop-up ones. I mean, you know, they have all kinds of tricks
and,
they use.
You look at it from the context of what's the point of the malware? What's the point of the attack? The point of ransomware is to get you to pay the ransom. It's the digital equivalent of me putting a gun to your head and saying, either empty your wallet or I kill you. So when you put it in that perspective, it's like, okay, if you don't follow what they want you to do, then you're less likely to be targeted. Now, is that necessarily true for every incident? No. But when you look at it from a perspective of, okay, we've got ransomware that we're dealing with, and somebody's trying to sell you something that's protecting you from ransomware, well, what if it's not ransomware? Because ransomware, while it's a big threat, you know, we're still dealing with, what was the Verizon DBIR said that the industries are dealing with something like 66 or 70% malware being delivered through email. So, and that's not just ransomware. That's
right.
ACH transfers. That's, you know, stuff that'll just get in there and harvest your keystrokes. So you're looking at keylogs, things
like
that.
But hey, there's manufacturers that include that as a feature with your laptop, so.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the other thing is I think we're running out of adjectives to put in front of Panda. So we have to come up with something else.
There's pandas and unicorns. We were talking to Greg Holland. At a different podcast, and there's lions and tigers and bears, oh my, and there's unicorns. What's the one we use for North Korea? Somewhere somebody from CrowdStrike's yelling at their
yeah.
I know it, I forgot it, sorry. It's like some weird mythical creature thing, because the North Koreans
are chupacabra?
I'm pretty sure it's not the chupacabra.
Those are native to North Korea, right?
I'm pretty sure that's not the case. So, Nick, here's the question I've got is, If we started with this premise that things are basically as bad as we can stand it, but only as bad as we can stand it, but not much worse and not much better, what does that mean for the longevity of what we do?
Oh, that's an interesting question. So I think realistically there's never going to be a lack of work for us because somebody's always going to build a better mouse when we build the better mouse trap.
I think it was the gesture that said criminal's going to crim, man.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, there's nothing stopping somebody from doing something bad. I mean, I really find that in the InfoSec industry, from a blue team perspective, we're constantly on the back foot. You know,
forever.
And there's something going around this morning that says, well, if we can't trust you to be defensive, how are we going to trust you to be offensive?
Well, that was
especially the legislation going around.
Oh my,
No, I'm sorry. If you aren't starting from a secure base, you know, how can you be trusted? Oh, well, we're going to hack them back. Well, no, they hacked you in the first place.
Well, that was the response to WannaCrypt. Somebody, one of the senators said,
yes.
This is why we should allow them to hack back. And somebody I actually quite respect on Twitter said, Are you insane? Do you know what you just said?
I think somebody needs to send him chapter 3 from Stealing the Network and let him know that that's you know, not something that really is a good idea. Because you're messing with people that this is what they do. So it's not really the realm of the 400-pounder in New Jersey that it was before.
You're making presidential candidates sad right now. You're destroying the narrative. It's a 400-pound kid in their mom's basement.
Right, exactly. It's no longer that. I mean,
puts the Twinkie down.
Right, yeah. I mean, listen, snap into a Slim Jim as much as the next guy. Well,
I thought that tweet was in it because I saw that. You know, it was like, look, you know, if we can't be defensive, then why would we be good at offense or something? And I actually responded to one of those because typically most of the people I know in security are offensive and they would not be any good at defensive.
Right.
Like they wouldn't, they're not good at defensive. They're actually good at offensive. Yeah. So I didn't like the response. I knew where it was coming from, but it's like, but yeah, a lot of people aren't. That's why they're on offense, because it's easier than it is defense.
All day long.
Yeah, I mean, to come up with this idea that, hey, we should be able to hack back, I mean, but wait a minute. I mean, do you even understand the problem? Which, obviously, we don't understand the problem.
I was going to say.
Or they don't understand the problem because, you know, to, you know, recommend that.
Simple solutions for extremely complex geopolitical world problems, because that's what cybercrime has turned into. Or as Patrick said, it's just crime. So crime is a geopolitical issue, right? It's geosensitive. It isn't, you know, the internet brought crime to parts of the world that you could then globalize it and take it international.
I wonder how that works, though. If you were to implement hackback in the WannaCry situation and your systems detect that your other systems are hacking your current systems, would you just destroy yourself? Like, how does that...
Yeah. A black hole would form?
Would you just implode?
The internet ceases to exist.
Like, yes, we've given you permission to hack back. And you're like, wait a minute, dot one over there is attacking dot two. Go back and attack dot one.
The phone calls come in from inside the house.
You know, somewhere there's a penguin doing doobie doobie. Remember those?
Right, yeah.
That's where you're going with that. I see that. So, look, this isn't... We introduced the Internet of Things, the Internet of broken, insecure, horribly coded, badly sold, overhyped, and sometimes unnecessary things.
But we introduced that, like... 20 years ago, when the routers first start coming out,
right?
Because I mean, I feel like
that was James that said it. That was not Raph. Just for the record,
routers are considered Internet of Things. We've had them for a long time.
I guess I spend enough time on Twitter that my refrigerator should probably tweet at me that the milk's expired because I don't open it anyway.
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of things that are happening, but we were talking about sort of the as we were walking back before we hit record on this, so. Where if a criminal element really wanted, I think it's probably more of a nation state, right? When we've got 0-day vulnerabilities that can actually shut down, bypass whatever the defensive mechanisms du jour are, they can walk past our best tools, our built-in software protections, and all the things that we are interested in, and. If they wanted to really cripple us, like get out onto, get into the U.S. financial network, right? Forget the workstations, hit up all the ATM networks, crypto lock all of those, and just throw away the key, right? A day before a major U.S. holiday or something, and you will create riots in the U.S. I think the reason that doesn't happen, and friends of mine that work in intelligence and that part of the business world will tell you there's no end to that. Like, inciting madness only works if there's a goal to be gained. And like you guys were saying, criminals are deploying ransomware because it makes them money.
Yeah.
And they're being good at customer service because it makes them money. Who brought up the example of the villager that didn't have money? Was that you, Jim?
Yeah, I saw something. I don't remember if it was LinkedIn or Twitter, but there was a screenshot of the message that was sent from the person that got the ransomware back to the customer service saying, I don't remember the exact details, but something like, we live in a small village, we don't have the money to pay for this. And they responded back saying, our campaign into that region wasn't well thought out, so we're going to go ahead and unlock your stuff. And, if you'd like to donate, here's a link, and you could donate money to our cause or something. But it was, it was interesting to see, you know, that it's like, hey, you know what, if you come out and claim, you'll look, I ain't got this type of money. I mean, you know, I pay with, I'm a farmer, I pay with vegetables, all right? I trade for my stuff. I ain't got no cash.
You know, I'm on a pedal bike to use the to create enough electricity to charge my laptop batteries.
You know, but I mean, of course, how does that go over? I mean, when you take customer support to that level, right? When you make it easy, okay, somebody had to give up something, but if it's not a lot, right? If you had to go out, if they put ransomware on your machine and it was $30 to get it taken off, and it was an easy, streamlined process, how many people are really going to stand up and say, you know what, I'm going to take the time to go file some report and complain about it? One, it's $30, so it falls way under most of the limits that, you know, major criminal investigators are going to pop into.
Nobody's,
right? So
nobody's touching that
you're,
one.
You're keeping it low enough, but you're also keeping the cost low enough that the effort I would take to try to fight it would cost me more.
Well,
it's just paying it, right? It's easy. Nobody's going
to
say anything.
Well, that's what I said earlier, right? It's like the fraud rates.
Yeah.
They're exactly where we need them to be. And that is – I'm telling you guys, that is where the criminal element that created ransomware, the ones that are getting really good at it. Do you see that they were using the Big Mac index? The McDonald's, you guys know what the Big Mac index is, right? The cost of a Big Mac in any different part of the world regionally.
Okay,
right.
So they were, wasn't WannaCry, it was one of the other ones that was using the Big Mac index to figure out what they would charge to decrypt a machine
in that
region. Which is like, so if it lands in LA, jack that price up, right? If it lands in frickin' Paducah, Kentucky, bring that down, son. Right, because you know. So
if this is any lesson to anybody, pick a VPN service and go out and make sure they have a node in Paducah, Kentucky.
I think
that way it makes it look like every time ransomware drops on your machine, it's 25 cents to get it undone because it's the cheapest on the Big Mac index here.
The lesson here is. Stock up on Big Macs. That way you can just turn them around and then decrypt your machine.
But, you know, you go back to what you were saying, you know, about, okay, we've gotten past all of our controls. How are we protected? And we can use WannaCry as an example for this. You've gotten past our control. Okay, we missed patches. But we should have a next stage to that of we didn't patch. And that is, if our stuff goes down, if it gets encrypted, do I have backups to be able to pull in? Do I have a way to recover? Do I have all this stuff? And if you take that even to a larger level, if we really thought, I mean, if it wasn't, there's really no end game here to taking out full critical infrastructure. If I want to take out the electric grid in the United States, if they actually thought that was something that would happen, and we like in security to say could, should have, could have, whatever.
Is likely
if
to.
If we actually thought it would we not be pushing for people to get things like, hey, you know, we recommend that people have generators at their house. You know, there's a serious threat that we could have electricity pulled up. All right, you pulled electricity. Everybody fires up a generator. You know, I mean,
yeah.
There's backup plans you can create. Now, can you get everybody in the country to do that? No. Fortunately, 90% of Florida is already covered because everybody has generators for hurricanes. But, you know, I mean, you have those backup plans.
He calls him on it. Well done, Nick. Like a boss.
But you have those backup plans, right? I mean, there's going to be that scenario of you got past all these things. And what's your next piece there?
Well,
I
think this is really kind of a twofold question. One of them goes to what Raf was saying about there being a market level for ransomware. So going with the Big Mac index, or let's say, okay, so WannaCry asked for $300 US in bitcoins for the first, what was it, 6 days or 7 days, and then it went up to $600 US after two weeks. And then it was taken away. Okay, so that looks like it can fluctuate based on the value of a Bitcoin. So really, you can adjust that. If you're a ransomware author, you can say, all right, what's the market doing with Bitcoins? Let me adjust that. So it's not quite something that people aren't going to want to do. They say, okay, well, let me balance this. You know, not that we recommend paying the ransom, but if it's the difference between your business going out of business and you being able to keep the doors open...
The cost of doing business.
And sometimes,
look, the criminal, What really annoyed me in this latest round of malware is, and I made fun of this at the beginning, and I'll bring it back up again, is all these Twitterati out there, right? If only people had patched, right? This wouldn't have happened. Or, well, if they had just, the best one was, well, if they had just not clicked on things. I'm like, you don't really even know that phishing was the vector, but hey, I guess it's a good narrative.
Yeah. All the other ransomware is delivered that way. Why not this one?
Well, but that's the thing. You're talking about there's a dropper, then there's actually the payload. So how it gets there, they're separate. The entire industry around crime has verticalized many, many years ago, right? It's the guy at the, we've all seen Ficino, right? He's not the guy collecting the money from the, from the corner bodega. He's got guys who got guys who got guys who got guys, right? And if those guys get locked up, it's like,
I'll get more.
I get more guys, yeah. Right? So what happened when that big, a couple of years ago, the criminal syndicate went out and cleaned out a bunch of ATMs? You DDoSed the financial network. Meanwhile, you're kind of going and perusing through their network, finding how to get into the ATMs, got a bunch of fake cards, stolen a bunch of cards, got a bunch of fake cards created while the entire security team and fraud teams were e-fraud teams were fighting DDoSes and account lockouts and all kinds of customer service problems. They went and cleaned out a bunch of ATMs.
Yeah, and this goes back to really the blue team always being on the back foot, because red teams and really the actual criminal elements are coming out with better and faster ways of screwing up your whole day. And so,
making you have a bad time.
Making you have a bad time, yeah. So being in a blue team position and helping companies get to an area where they can actually deal with something of that advanced nature really is contingent upon them having a basic level of competency. And you look at that in terms of everybody saying, well, why didn't you just patch? Okay, and I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say that if you're on a 2-month patch window, you should probably revise that, just because that might be a tad on the slow side. But if you look at it, let's say you have a 25,000 endpoint system, and you've got 5 guys that are maintaining that, and that is the entire consistency of your blue team. Those guys are already working 60 and 80 hour weeks just putting out whatever fires come up day to day.
Yeah, fair enough.
You throw ransomware into that, you throw, hey, why did you have 445 open to the internet into that? It's like, well, you know what? That was set up by a guy that retired 5 years ago. That wasn't documented.
It's item number 715 in my list of things to do to secure this company.
I'll get to it in eight months.
Right, right.
What we're trying to do is actually help people understand that, yeah, you probably shouldn't have done that, but shaming people into that mindset isn't the way to do it. It's the same with phishing awareness. Shaming people that clicking on phishing emails, it's not effective. So you have to help people understand why they got hit, why it was a problem, why they have that issue, and then help them get above that and get them to a state where they can actually deal
with it. Well, that's because a lot of times we assume that we understand the context that they're in, right?
Exactly.
So, we just assume. I mean, you look, I think about this, and you look at like old people, like old guys, like grandfather age, that type of stuff. And you're like, you have no idea like what their life's been like. I mean, you think about years past when they had, these people that went to like wars, like my dad was in Vietnam, that type of stuff. No even concept of what that was probably like. You have no idea what people have been through, the whole walk in somebody's shoes. And so we're so quick to judge and say, well, in my environment, we don't do this, so how come you do this? And we can't do that. And what's really hard, I think, in security, especially a lot of the people that we see that post that are real quick to say, oh, you should have patched, or your patch cycle should be quicker, or this and that, they're probably not even running patching programs. They're not actually doing.
They're not responsible for
those things, right? So that's not part of your thing. I mean, how many consulting companies do you know where you talk to them and they're like, oh yeah, we do pen testing, and we'll tell you all day long, well, you should patch, and you should do this, and you should run this, and you should run that. And they're like, okay, what do you run on your system? Oh, well, I can't run any antivirus, and I can't do this, and I can't have this because of the tools I have. And, so I don't implement any of that, but I'll tell you
exactly
how easy it should be to do it.
It's real easy for you to say, well, you should have just patched when you've got your your VMware server running five VMs that you use for testing, right? And you're not working in that 25,000 endpoint system where you've got devices coming in and out, you've got cell phones coming in and out, you've got all these different vectors, you've got people jumping on your wireless to look, you know, at the latest, you know, whatever's on YouTube or anything like that.
Or you got custom software that's running that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you can't just deploy a patch
the,
on there.
The custom
and all
software
of a sudden...
that the guy that maintained it semi-retired in 1976, and nobody knows how to program in COBOL today, so let's hope it doesn't break.
But, you push out a patch. I mean, you gave an example of two pieces of software not working over lunch that didn't work well together.
Right.
Right? I mean, you know, you have situations where... that patch goes out, and look, I mean, we've seen it before. I mean, Microsoft's released patches that didn't go over so well.
No, well, that's the major argument for why didn't you patch.
Right, like
because they break stuff.
I need to make sure that it's going to flow. And, you know, how long that takes. Again, if I don't understand what your day-to-day is, I'm assuming your day-to-day is not coming in and verifying patches all day. I don't even know what that process looks like for you to do that.
Exactly.
So it's just hard for people to, you know, be able to come at it with constructive criticism, you know, and say, hey, what's the problem? How come we're unable to patch in that 2-month window versus you should be patching quicker?
People look at it from the perspective that they're in. And because we're in information security, this should be as easy for everybody else as it is for us, when that very much is not true. There are a select number of people that know how to do what people in information security do, and even not everybody in information security is that good at what they do.
Well,
I mean, you know.
You saying that, though, like, you know, we should be able, they should be able to do what we do, yet, you know, we talked about things like reducing endpoint, you know, like, hey, you should, not everybody needs to be an administrator on their machine, but go out, walk into any
security. I was going
to
say, I am telling you.
And it's like, well, I need administrative privileges.
Yeah.
And it's like,
what's the percentage of people that run as local admin?
You know? So, right. So everybody else doesn't need it, but for some reason you need it.
That's the thing. So, I think you want to get a measure of truly how many security professionals in your organization, those of you guys listening, really get what it's like to be a typical end user. Pull them away from their machine and find out all the stuff that's non-standard, custom, hacked together, local admin privileges, do as I say, not as I do kind of BS, and then go, so I'm going to give you the standard core load I give everybody else. Now, for your administrative duties, here's your secondary auth and password for these systems. For the other duties you have, here's your other thing, and blah, 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 blah. And they're like, oh, when I can't do my job, I'm sorry, but
no. But that's where you bring in the argument for password managers, because then you only have to remember one.
But it is right there. There's a different level that's expected where you and I think I feel like we talked about this not too long ago, where there was information that came out. I mean, security people click on a lot of these emails.
They,
you know, it's not like
and
it drives
lot,
me nuts. I saw somebody tweet about it saying, you know, look, we got to give people a break. You know, they don't know. What the security clicks on you. We can't go around with this notion that nobody in security clicks on phishing emails or anything. Like, they're just as susceptible, probably even more susceptible, because they think they know better.
Yeah.
That, you know, oh, no, that's nothing. And, you know, and they click through it. We're no more special than anybody. It's like when I watch cops and you hear the cops talk about citizens. You know, like, oh, we're here to protect the citizens. Like, well, you're a cop now. You're not
you're
a citizen anymore.
Like,
you're a citizen.
Like, hey, newsflash, maybe you're a citizen.
You know, but we're not elevated above anymore.
Right.
And when we start realizing that and say, look, we're just like everybody else. I mean, I'm not above. I'm not a law enforcer. I'm not anything. Like, I don't have special authority. I'm the same as everybody else. I make the same mistakes as everybody else. You know, and we're here to help. We're a supportive function, not a, you know, directive.
And to not to say we should all, you know, sit around the campfire and sing kumbaya, but I think as security professionals, it's important for us to remember that we do have a select set of skills, and we are gifted with those, and we should be able to use those to help people understand security concepts and why security is important. Because right now, people don't care about security. I think it's our job not only to secure whatever organization we're dealing with, but also to help people understand why it's important to do that.
I mean, I think, though, a lot of it, I mean, I agree. I mean, I don't think people have, it's not in the forefront of a lot of people's mind, right? If you're outside the security industry, security's not big. If I were to go talk to any of my family, besides my wife, because I gripe to her about security all the time, but you talk to anybody else in my family, like, they would, the security's not a forefront. Yeah, my mom's calling me because she's got some stupid browser hijacker, you know, that's hijacked her browser, and she's finding out, wanting to know how to get past that. But there's no concern. If you ask them about the Target breach or you ask them about these other things that have occurred, they still shop at those places. They, you know, they didn't suffer any impact. It was, yeah, it was a big news story. Even my neighbor, who I don't talk to very often, but I talk to him, and, you know, he's like, oh, did you hear about that big Microsoft breach?
Which one?
He was talking about WannaCry.
Yeah.
But, you know, they get on the news and they're talking about it's Microsoft and it's this, you know, it's Windows and it's this breach. People don't understand what we're saying.
Exactly.
And I was like, oh, he's like, yeah, I mean, it's shutting down hospitals. It's all, you know, like, he's thinking it's this devastating thing.
It is the end of the world.
You know, because that's how it's being portrayed. But you know what? If I go back, and that was last week.
When we're recording, yeah.
But if I go back and talk to him when I get back from Vegas, I bet he doesn't even remember anything about that thing.
Exactly.
I bet he doesn't even know. Because why? It didn't impact him. Just the same as, look, I don't care that somebody could put a slip or slide up against the edge of a wall. I don't care. Okay, I could slip on it. I could slide into it, break my neck. But guess what? I'm not going to do that.
Right.
Right? So I don't take... Okay.
I don't know. It's Vegas. We got some beers yet.
So. I don't drink. So, but you know what I mean? Like,
get you enough
like Mountain
Dew, you'll do it.
We always see these crazy laws that are out there, you know, like, oh, I got to do this because somebody might do this. But the rest of society doesn't really care because they're not doing it.
Right, exactly.
You know, and that's the exact same thing with security is until it impacts me, I'm not going to sit there and spend a lot of cycles on it. Because I could be doing other things, like trying to get likes on Facebook or whatever it is people
right,
do all
exactly.
day. You know, but why am I going to focus on that when I see no gain, right? It's the same deal we see in business, right?
Absolutely.
Show me what I'm getting out of this. What's my return on investment for this? And we have our time showing it there. You think we can show it at the consumer side?
Right.
I want to help you with that. No.
With zero liability with our credit cards, you rarely see, or at least it's not publicized,
yeah.
you rarely see health, like, oh, we got to protect health information, but it's not very public, the amount of people
yeah,
that
we
actually
see a lot of
suffer.
That, but that's because we're
right?
in the industry.
But
yeah.
you know, if you walk out to talk to my neighbor, hey, how many people, and his wife works in health,
well,
how many people are suffering from health fraud or, you know, whatever it is we're getting from our health information still, how many actually get affected by that? And these people's stories, they're not being told. Like, that's the type of stuff that if it's really a problem... Why are we not getting that out?
To speak to your point about it's the way things are phrased, I mean, if you're ever going someplace and you're just making small talk with a person, they ask what you do. You know, there have been times where I said, oh, I'm in InfoSec or I'm in information security. They say, what's that? I say, well, I'm in cybersecurity. They say, oh, like computers and stuff like that? Yeah, absolutely, because that's the way it's framed. Just, you know, as much as we're all tired of the word cyber... I mean, when you frame it as cybersecurity, people get this idea of, you know, what was the thing that going around on Twitter with the people in hoods on keyboards. It's like, yeah, that's absolutely what I do.
I travel with a hoodie.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Just a hoodie and typing on a keyboard all day. That's all I do.
But
that's the frame of mind people are working in. And so I think part of what we need to do as security professionals is work on security to make it seamless. To make it so people don't necessarily have to care. But that gets to the border of if it's secure, it's not usable.
I think so.
So striking that balance.
That's somewhat where we are. I mean, it's not necessarily fully seamless, but it's at the point where people don't have to care. Like credit card, I get my credit card information. I don't have to care. As long as I follow the rules of I monitor my statements. If I see something fraudulent, I alert the card company. They remove it. I don't have to get... That's seamless to me. You know, and so that's why I'm saying, from a health perspective, I don't have a lot of information on that. I don't see it posted out there for us all the time. But those type of situations, a lot of times, people don't have to care because there's not, another password breach. Okay, I reset my password.
Yeah.
I'm on to the next piece. I don't have to care. But what's interesting is, you know, you're saying people like, oh, what? You know, when I say IT security, but I was on the shuttle in Jacksonville going to the airport. And somebody asked me what I did or what conference I was at, and I was like, you know, it was for security. they were like, oh, like TSA?
And I was like, yes, James is basically a TSA agent at this point.
Isn't that all we are in InfoSec is glorified TSA?
But it's funny, though, that they would drop to physical security, because what we see physical security.
Right.
We go to the mall, we see security guards walking around. We drive on the streets, we see police cars driving around. Right, we see physical security. We don't see cybersecurity.
No.
Or if we want to remove cyber. Now we don't see security anymore. But you don't see it, right? I used to work for Sensormatic a long time ago, right? When you walk out of Walmart, it sets off that stupid alarm. That was what we did. You see it. It's there. It's for a purpose. But cybersecurity, you don't see what we're doing. It's kind of like CIA, right?
But
it's like,
all you see for
security...
You get
no glorification for...
All you see for security right now, or cybersecurity, is advertising.
Yeah.
And this goes back to what we were talking about earlier with people making a big deal out of WannaCry, is that, you know, you look at like LifeLock commercials. Anybody in InfoSec says, well, they're just doing stuff that you can do yourself, but it makes it convenient. That's a selling point. I mean, realistically,
I like convenience.
Yeah, everybody likes convenience. But if you look at it from a marketing perspective, the only thing that the general public sees about security is marketing. So when somebody makes a bunch of hype, a bunch of noise about something like WannaCry, that's all they're seeing, is they're getting that side. Where those of us that are actively monitoring things like that and saying, well, no, that's not exactly right, or there's no proof,
facts.
You know, we're dealing
alternative facts, alternative truths.
You know, no, we deal in hard facts here. Let's get that straight.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, for the record,
the
data says one thing, you know, context may put it into a certain light, but your normal everyday person that's not knee-deep in security like we are only sees it from a marketing perspective. So that's something where if the marketing is disingenuous or exaggerates, you know, I think it's our job in security to say, now, hold on, you know, Mr. Marketing Man, let's just do this in a way where we're not going to be painted like a bunch of idiots because we said some stuff that isn't true. So,
guys, let me ask this as we close out our time together here. I've been thinking about something as we've been talking, and we mentioned, you know, the kind of catastrophic issues we may have if somebody really wanted to get malicious and really researched and did some bad things. They could cause a significant amount of nasty damage. However, what has caused more? We mentioned healthcare sector, right? So what has caused more potential, we'll call it adverse health situations, because I don't want to refer to loss of life, that's kind of a bad thing, but what has caused more adverse health situations, air quotes, security researchers, end air quotes, or actual malware? I don't want to
piss off anybody that's subscribing to your Twitter channel or anything like that. But I think the difference between such quoted security researchers and actual malware authors, criminal elements, is that the criminal elements are out to make money.
Yeah.
And body count doesn't make money.
Right. That's a great way to put it.
You know, body count doesn't make money, but for a security researcher, somebody that's maybe doing an unwarranted pen test against a hospital environment, something like that, finding a weakness, maybe they have the unintended consequences of they cause an issue. So, I mean, that comes back to ethical, you know, testing, ethical working around those concepts, whereas the criminal just wants to make money, and dead people don't make money.
But while dead people don't make money, an argument could be made that if I can sit there and cause that drastic of a problem, and people realize, listen, I get this ransomware, whatever it is, on my system, and it actually is this cost, well, then I can charge more for that, because...
That's true.
So I mean, there's another side to that. That, you know, actually, if I can make it more devastating, I could make it worth more money. Like it's worth more you to fix this.
James, stop coming up with more good ideas for criminals.
There is an analogy that I like to use.
Go ahead.
And to bring it back to a little bit of a historical perspective, I think people get, you know, the Disney ideas of pirates mixed up with the way pirates really worked. And pirates often didn't kill people. They would let people go after taking their share of whatever the cargo was on the ship, because dead people are bad for business. And you bring up a good point. If you're a criminal organization and you can deploy ransomware to a hospital that says, if you don't pay this, you know, whatever machines you have are going to be destroyed forever and you're going to lose somebody on the operating table, sure, you might get them to pay once, but then they're going to be prepared for that the next time.
Yeah, but also think about the response that garnishes, right? You put somebody's life
really
at risk.
Bad press.
You go from a CTI team responding to you to like
door kickers.
What's that? Well, to people that kick your door down and don't hesitate to pull triggers.
And that's
right?
what I was going to say. I mean, you know, there's the side that, look, if I can make it more devastating, the next person that gets this are going to realize, hey, this is serious, I better pay it. But we talked about that balance, right? You make
it's
it too devastating.
Exactly.
Now you've gone from, all right, yeah, somebody will get to that guy. We'll put it in the caseload to, you know, call out criminal minds here and hunt this cat down and take care of it. You know what I mean?
You're like reenacting the helicopter scene from Zero Dark Thirty, right?
That's exactly.
You know, so there's that fine balance there. But, I mean, there's a case to be made. The more devastating I can make it, while it may be a shorter run, I may be able to make more. I mean, that's trade-off. That
so
they
do you
have
want the big payday or do you want the slow bleed?
I think, I don't know. I don't know enough about this industry, but from what I've read from people that work this every day is the number of people that this is if you guys listen to the Freakonomics podcast, fantastic. You remember the book Freakonomics?
Yeah.
And so I've read all of them. Dubner's a genius, but they've got this. They were talking about, you know, people seeing, like, if you listen to, you know, specific types of music and you know, watch some of these, like, gangster movies, like modern day stuff, you think that, you know, life of the criminal element is everybody is, you know, fat stacks of cash everywhere, everybody's big pimping, and it's just the world's awesome. But it turns out it's really hard to make money selling crack. And, you know, but that's what they were saying. Is they actually did analysis of like the pyramid there, and there is usually one person at the top, and everybody below them wants to be that guy.
Right.
And so you spend a lot of time clawing your way up, getting to the top. You have a very short run of actually making a lot of money, and then you're dead.
There's a really great book along those lines. It's called, I believe, How to Run a Drug Cartel. And it's a technical breakdown of the money behind something like the Sinaloa cartel. And it talks about the logistics that go into running a drug company. And it's not a glamorous life except for that guy at the top.
Except for the guy in the big villa with the henchmen and the automatic weapons. And
right, the gold-plated AK.
Right.
You know.
Well, this has been fun. That's a great place to end this show, on the gold-plated AK. Oh, boy. Oh,
it was a good day.
It was a good day. Well, hey, looks like we didn't hopefully this sparks some interest, and you guys are listening, you know, have some new thoughts. Nick, your Twitter handle is
Skeletoned, SKELET0WN3D.
That is so 3133.
Yeah, it's a mouthful. Don't follow me on Twitter. I'm not funny.
you're a joy in real life. So glad to have you on the show. And James, we know who you are on Twitter. You're the guy that takes the brunt of the bad comments for me.
Yeah, apparently, you know, you're a good guy, I'm bad guy or something. So
we're like
good cop, bad cop here.
No, it's like what was the remember that, was it the Nice Guys?
What was
the movie with Owen? I think Owen Wilson was in it.
Oh, it was the Nice Guys. It was Mark Wahlberg and Will
Nice
Ferrell.
Guys.
Yeah.
which one's who? Anyway.
No, I don't know.
Anyway.
I probably have that all wrong. Don't hate me, Twitter.
Well, isn't that Twitter's job to hate all of us?
Actually, yeah, I'm going to get Twitter bombed. That was probably a bad idea.
Can we edit
out the part with my handle?
No, we can't. And just for added color, I'm going to go ahead and give people your home address and phone number.
Yeah, just take a picture of my apartment and put it on Twitter, too. I mean, you know, since that's what we're doing now, I guess.
That does appear, but only if you're a good guy. Yeah. All right, folks. Thanks for listening. We have been broadcasting straight to your earbuds from Infuse Conference 2017 here in Las Vegas. Again, thanks for Guidance Software for having us out. We've got a ton of content trickling out to you over the next couple of weeks from the show. Depending on when you're listening to this, you can go rewind and check it out. Lots of good stuff. Lots and lots of good stuff. Lots of great speakers interviewing all the keynotes out here. So there's a, just a mountain of awesome stuff. Hashtag DTSR if you want to catch up with us, James and I, on the podcast. We do monitor Twitter every once in a while.
Every once in a while.
Every once in a while. For fan mail, hate mail, and just, you know, group hugs, because we're friendly kind of people. Thanks for listening, you guys. And don't forget, if you haven't subscribed already, check out the RSS feed on the ftwr.libsyn.com, or you can go to podcast.whiterabbit.net or however the heck you found this. Subscribe, check out some of the back episodes, leave us comments, leave us reviews. Tell us why this podcast has changed your life for the better. Too much? Maybe too much. All right. I'm getting a little too much. All right. Again, thanks for listening. This is Raph, the Down the Ski Rabbit Hole podcast. We will see you guys another time, another place. We'll check you out later. See you later. Bye.
As we fade out on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole episode, we'd like to encourage you to chat with our hosts and guests using the Twitter hashtag #DTSR. Please check out the show notes, catch up on any episodes you may have missed, and subscribe so you don't miss a future episode. Our website is whiterabbit.net, whitrabbit.net. So on behalf of Rafal, James, Michael, and our guests, for now it's goodbye. We'll see you soon on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast.